Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by 1-800-DIALDJs.com. If you need live entertainment for your party, wedding, bar mitzvah, or corporate event in the New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia metro area, check out 1-800-DIALDJs.com for a real good time. All right, so where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Estate fortunes have been won and lost at record speed in recent years, with millions of families underwater in their current homes, losing their homes to foreclosure, and just plain befuddled by what was once the safest and most encouraged of investments. Buying or selling a home is one of the biggest financial transactions that most people will ever make. First-time homebuyers in particular have no idea where to start. What they need is a roadmap and an experienced guide that can advise when to shop and when to not, what's a gem and what's a scam. Peter Richman is probably that guy. He's the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Buying a Home. If anyone can offer good, simple advice on how to do it, it's got to be him. Peter, welcome to Mr. Media.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. Good. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. I'm sitting through a pretty good rainstorm right now out here outside of San Francisco, but, you know, what the hell, it's not bad. At least warm.
There you go. Make sure the house that you're looking at does not leak.
Definitely. if you have leaks, you have more than just water coming in. You have the potential down the road of mold.
See? Number one thing. Let's start there. No. Well, actually, Peter, what I wanted to ask you is, how does a guy get to have this much expertise about buying homes? Have you bought that many homes? Are you in real estate? Tell folks a little about your background before we get started.
Well, I'm both in real estate as an owner and as an investor and as a realtor. So I've both bought and sold, and I help other people buy and sell.
Hmm. All right. And let me ask you this. You're in San Francisco. I'm in Florida. Very, very different home markets. But what we're going to talk about and the things in the book, are they general rules, rules of thumb for no matter where you are geographically?
Yeah, the book is not locally centric to any particular city. It is meant to be a general guideline or guidebook for people no matter where they may be in the United States. And in spite of my experience, 17 years as a realtor, that's been here in California, although I've invested in property elsewhere and owned property elsewhere. But I also did a huge amount of research talking to local realtors and agents and people all over the country in putting this book together.
Hmm. All right. Well, let's kind of jump into this. It's been a long time since my wife and I bought a house. Fortunately, we've only done it once. But I seem to recall that there was a formula of how much of your monthly or annual income you should spend on your mortgage. Is that still an accurate measurement? And
well, it's been kind of a funny thing over the years. When I was a kid growing up back in Boston, years and years ago, the general rule was you should put down one-third of the purchase price as your down payment.
Hmm.
Over the decades, that kind of moderated and got weakened and softened to down to 20%, and then down to 10%. And in the recent housing crisis, or what led up to it, we saw in some cases borrowers able to borrow 100% or more of their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing it probably back to between 10 and 20% that the banks generally are insisting on. I won't tell you that you can't find financing with a smaller down payment, but the bankers now are starting to get back to where they probably should have been all along.
And what's the point of that percentage? Well, if I'm thinking about buying a home, why would I want to put more down? What advantage would there be?
Well, there's a plus and a minus no matter which way you go. The idea in putting more down from the bank's point of view, of course, is that they feel you're a bigger partner in the risk on your home. If anything goes south, you've already got some equity in it as well that you want to protect. From your own point of view, the advantage of putting more down is it means you'll borrow less, so your monthly payments will be less. The disadvantage, if it is a disadvantage of putting more down, is that you've got to have a bigger chunk to come up with up front. And some of the government lending programs that have been around for decades, like the VA loans and the FHA loans, up to a certain fixed dollar amount as a maximum that you could borrow, didn't require a down payment. You could borrow 100% of the purchase, and the banks would do that because there was a federal government guarantee behind it. And in many cases, the people who would avail themselves of those mortgages were folks just starting out in life. For one reason or another, hadn't bought a home before, didn't have any equity. The GI loans, for example, there were people coming back from the service, maybe from the war, who were trying to get a start in life, and you know, the grateful country was trying to help them.
And we're going to jump around a little bit. What's the first thing someone should do if they're thinking about getting a home? Should they get pre-approved, or is that jumping ahead?
Well, it never hurts to get pre-approved. And there's two versions of that. There's a pre-qualification, there's a pre-approval. A pre-approval is a much more in-depth thing. In essence, a pre-qualification basically means you've talked to a lender for maybe 4 or 5 minutes, possibly even only on the phone without meeting them, and they've asked you a few questions and said, okay, it looks like maybe somewhere down the road you might possibly qualify for a loan to buy a home. Please don't, you know, bet your life savings on this. A pre-approval means that you've actually made a formal application for the loan. It's been underwritten. In other words, they've done all their investigating and checking you out to make sure you can repay it. And you are approved. You do have a loan subject usually only to an appraisal on the property you use it on and review of the preliminary title report.
Mm-hmm. And I mean,
if you're in a very competitive market, a very competitive seller's market, in other words, where lots of buyers are bidding on not too many homes, having a pre-approval is absolutely the gold standard, because if two people come in, let's say, on a really nice home, and they make exactly the same offer, except for one of them has a pre-approval for the loan and the other one doesn't, the other one's got a contingency that, you know, if you accept my offer, I'll go out and get a loan. Mm-hmm. The seller, you know who's going to get it. The seller figures, well, this is one less worry I have to go through if I use this person who has a pre-approval, so I'll just do that. It's, you know, it gives you an advantage, very definitely.
Well, I was going to say, it kind of brands you as a serious buyer too, to the realtor and the seller, right? Because they look and go, okay, I'm not wasting my time with someone who doesn't even know if they can buy a home.
That's true.
You know,
if somebody comes to us as a buyer, however they make the initial contact, whether it's from our website or they walked into one of our open houses or they got a flyer or something. And they say, you know, I really like what I see about you, and I'd like you to represent me and help me buy a house. The first thing we ask them, along with all the other questions to see what their wants and needs are, the first thing we ask them is, have you talked to a lender? Are you pre-approved? And if they aren't, we immediately suggest that they hook up if they have a lender they want to use. Maybe they've been with their own bank, whether it's Chase or Bank of America or whoever, for 10, 20 years, and they've got a relationship, that's cool. Or if they don't, we'll hook them up with a mortgage broker that we know from experience is an excellent individual to get them a loan, get them approved, and we'll have that process started so that when we actually find the house, they're all ready to go.
Well, that would seem to make a lot of sense. Are there still people who don't get that? I mean, that don't understand the importance of that?
Yeah, there are. A lot of people will say, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, Peter, and, you know, that's fine, but I don't want to, you know, get hooked up and get in debt too soon, and you know, let's wait till we find a house. And I have to explain to them, until you borrow the money, you're not in debt. And if it makes a difference between you getting the house that you really want and losing it to another buyer who's taken this step, it makes sense to get it. But, you know, there's
right.
Some people who just don't you know, pick up on it.
All right. What else do we need to do at the start of the process?
Well, you should, if you're a buyer, you should definitely. A couple of things you should do. You should definitely figure out what you want in a house. Some people say, you know, I'd like to buy a home. I'm tired of paying rent. Or maybe my company's transferred me from, let's say, from New Orleans to New York City, and I know nothing about the market there or whatever. But you should definitely figure out how many bedrooms and how many baths do I need? What else do I need in a house? Does it have to have a large family room? What kind of kitchen should it be? Should it be a kitchen that I can entertain, you know, casts of thousands, or can it be something that just myself and my family can work out with? How big of a yard do I need? Should it have views, or what kind? So on and so forth. Does it need a garage? Does it not need a garage? And at the same time you're figuring this out, so you know what to tell a realtor you're going to work with, you might want to start thinking about who your realtor is going to be. This is very important because while it's certainly true that people can and do buy houses without ever talking to a realtor, unless you're really, really, really experienced and you've done purchasing and selling property many times, the realtor will know a lot of the ins and outs that, that the average person, you know, because of lack of experience, can't even begin to imagine. Mm-hmm. And so you should figure out who your realtor is going to be. And that leads to the next question, obviously, that you'll probably ask, was how does somebody pick up a realtor? If you have one that you've used successfully before, that pretty well answers the question. Stay with them if you like them. Mm-hmm. If you don't have somebody, either because you're new to an area or because it's the first time you bought a house or something, you should interview two or three of them. Get references from friends, from coworkers, who they've used, who they like. Go to open houses. You'll probably meet some realtors there and see, you know, how they present themselves, how helpful they are about that house. And after you pick out two or three to talk to, sit down and interview them just the way you'd interview somebody that you were hiring, because that's exactly what you're doing. You're hiring them to work for you.
Now, do I want a realtor? And again, you know, some of these questions I'm asking to people who've been around are going to sound stupid, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I want a realtor?
Let me interrupt, Bob.
Let
me interrupt it. Because I get this thing from clients frequently is, I don't want to ask you this because it's a stupid question. There is no, I tell clients this all the time, there is no stupid question except for the one you don't ask that you should have.
There you go. Well, so here's the question. Do I want a realtor who's going to tell me what I want to hear, or do I want a realtor who's going to tell me the truth, who's going to tell me, you know, what you're asking for is impossible, or you're just not approaching this properly, or do I want someone who's just going to kind of kiss my butt in the process?
No, you want somebody who's going to be honest with you. I mean, they don't have to be insultingly honest, but you want somebody who, when you ask a question, even if it's a negative to what your desires are, you know, there are nice ways to say no, and there are not nice ways to say no. And you want somebody who's at least going to be honest with you, so that if you say, well, you know, I've got the following issues, and this house looks like it has everything I need, but I'm not sure about one particular characteristic. What do you think? And if the realtor, having talked to you and worked with you for a little while, maybe you've gone out and looked at some houses on several occasions, and he or she is kind of getting a feeling for what you're interested in, can honestly say, even though it may kill a deal, can honestly say, look, Mrs. Jones, this particular house has all the bedrooms and baths you want, but you don't want lots of noise and you know, all kinds of other intrusions into your lifestyle. And you're two blocks from the freeway, and another block over there, there's a huge high school, so there's kids streaming in and out, there's traffic all the time. You know, and that's not what you want. So you have to make a decision, Mrs. Jones, if you want to forget about the aggravation and live with it, or if you want a house that has everything you want without that, and we'll have to keep looking. And then, of course, you've told them the truth, but at least you've given them the options so they can see what the story is.
Hmm.
I mean, otherwise, if you get somebody who just basically, you know, keeps saying yes, it's wonderful, and never gives you a straight answer, you'll probably buy a house that has the number of beds and baths you want and the basic other things you want, but you'll probably be unhappy with it, and you'll end up hating the house and probably the realtor, and justifiably so in both cases.
Now, of course, you're here to because you've got a book. I'll repeat the title. It's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Buying a Home. Talk a little bit about how this book is set up and how it's intended to live up to the description of an easy to follow roadmap to your dream home. How do you go about that?
Well, basically, the book is set up. Aside from the usual, yeah, we got so many chapters and everything. It's set up in different parts. Which more or less follow a path from I'm going to start to look for a house till I finally own a house. And aside from introductions and telling you all of the basic things to think about in the larger picture, like, you know, getting financing, who do you talk to about being your agent, checking out locations and other details, thinking about what it will sell for after you own it years down the road, all of that sort of stuff. You then get into, as I've just mentioned, figuring out what your wants and needs and the ideal house are. Are you interested in a house? Would a condo be okay? Would a co-op be okay? You get into fixer-uppers. Some people who are really handy with their hands, and I envy them because I'm not, can buy a house that needs lots of work, and they're happy. They're happy as a clam because they can basically sit there and they can say, fine, you know, this thing needs work, but it's going to cost me less to buy, and I can do the work myself, and it'll be fabulous when I'm done, and it'll be a great project for me. I don't mind that. So sometimes, you know, you'll think of it as a fixer-upper, and that, does that work? You think about the size of the house. You think about the size of the lot, and you kind of work your way through. The way the book follows, you work your way through all these different considerations. There's a whole section telling you how to go about finding a realtor. What does a realtor actually do? What they don't do. Some people get an agent, they figure the realtor's going to do everything but make them breakfast. Not quite. But, you know, so the book kind of guides you through that. Then it gets into finances, how you go about getting pre-qualified or pre-approved, what your considerations on getting yourself into debt will be or should be, the pluses and minuses. Takes you through all the different steps to being approved. Takes you through different terminology and different types of mortgages. I mean, everybody thinks you get a mortgage. When I was younger, you got a mortgage for 30 years, and that was it, and it was an equal amount of payments every month. That's still around, but there are also interest-only loans. There are adjustable loans. There are, it's been for years, VA loans and FHA loans. And, in fact, a number of states have their own version of veterans loans that they do themselves. California does, Texas does, a couple other states do as well. So there's all these different things on loans to learn about. Then you get into searching for the house. It also tells you how to surf the web when you're looking for a house, which 15, 20 years ago, for all practical purposes, the web didn't exist. Today, almost 90% of all buyers, before they even set foot into a realtor's office, even if they know the realtor they're going to use, are already looking on the web for a house.
And do you recommend that?
All these things.
Peter, do you recommend that people use the web? Or,
yeah.
You know,
Definitely. I'll give you, for instance, how many places that you can track property on, and I'm just scratching the surface. If I list a person's home for sale, in other words, I'm representing the seller, I literally put that home on at least 92 separate websites. That's not a figure of speech. I can actually document it. Now, not everybody gets that many, but I guarantee you any listing realtor worth their salt will have that home on at least a half dozen sites. So if you are a home buyer, whether you've already picked a realtor or not, if you kind of know what type of house you're looking for, you know, what it should have in bedrooms, baths, location, yard, amenities, and you know where geographically you want to be, or even if you're being transferred across the country, you don't know the details of the local neighborhoods, but you want to get a flavor for the area you're moving to, you can sit down with a couple of keystrokes, and you can actually, figuratively speaking, walk through hundreds of houses. Because the way real estate is now shown on the web, it's not just still pictures and written descriptions, although they still definitely exist, but it's actually virtual tours, or what they're called, where you get a video from room to room to room of the house. So you can actually almost figuratively speaking walk through it. And I've seen people buy homes without ever seeing them physically, just from what they pick on the web. Somebody in my office a couple of years ago in Scotland bought a house here outside of San Francisco for $3 million. They never actually physically were in the house of art until about a month or two after they closed escrow.
Well, let's change gears a little bit, and let's talk about negotiating the home purchase. What can and what do I actually negotiate in buying a home? And how much am I involved, and how much do I need someone to do this on my behalf because I don't know what I'm doing?
Well, that's an excellent question, Bob. What it is, I mean, you as the buyer are making the decisions as to how many dollars you're going to spend and what you expect in return. Your realtor, one of the reasons you pick a realtor, is because they have the professional knowledge and expertise to help you put that desire, a set of desires, into writing in the form of a contract and help you negotiate in your behalf. A realtor doing their job will never make the decision for you because maybe they think you want A and it turns out you want X. And all of a sudden you're locked into a contract that you wanted nothing to do with. So a good realtor will not only represent you in the contract negotiations, they'll write the offer for you and present it to the agent for the seller. They'll not only represent you in that process, but if the seller says, well, okay, Mr. Smith, you're offering me $550,000 for my house, I'm asking $600,000, I don't want to accept $550,000, but maybe I'll accept $585,000. And I don't want it to close in 2 months, I want it to close in a month. So that they're countering your offer. Well, your agent's not going to say yes or no to that. He or she will come back to you and say, okay, here's what the seller is saying in response to your offer. What do you think? Let's talk about the different options. Do these shorter time frames disadvantage you, or is it something you can live with? Can you afford the extra $35,000 more than you'd offered? And so on. So that's part of the negotiations. Really good agents will have honed this their abilities in this process through lots of experience. In addition to that, some of them, my wife and myself included, will have actually taken graduate-level courses in, believe it or not, there are courses in negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just to help you work things out better on behalf of your client.
And what about attorneys? Do I want an attorney to be involved in this? And what do I do if I want an attorney and my realtor says, oh, you don't need an attorney, I'll take care of everything?
Well, that's a question that gets very geographic-centric in the United States, if there is such a term. Clearly, an attorney worth their salt can probably write a contract as well as any realtor. You know, and like any business, there are good realtors and bad realtors. There are good attorneys and bad attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as using an attorney goes, most real estate agents who have any experience are using pre-printed forms that they check off the boxes or fill in the blanks according to your needs. The general legal language is already there. It's been put together by attorneys before those forms were printed. Usually the local or state board of realtors has these forms available so that they're trying to keep things within the laws of the state and make it easy for everybody to work. You can have an attorney draft it, and sometimes you'll find that it works as well as with a realtor. You'll find other times, because of the attorney's desire to protect their client, which is you, they get too bound up in details, and nothing ever gets done.
Hmm.
And another issue with attorneys, in some states, once you have the contract written and agreed to, in some states you have escrow clauses, meaning that there is no attorney directly involved. It goes through a title company, and that's where all the money is held and the documents flow through and everything until the close of escrow and you own the house. In other countries, most of them east of the Mississippi, you have an attorney handling the close, so the attorney automatically is involved and does all of the title history research and checks the documents and the rest of the things. So it varies from state to state and locale to locale anyway.
Personally, do you think it's worthwhile to spend the money and have an attorney involved long term?
I come from kind of a prejudiced point of view on it. Besides being a realtor, I have a law degree myself, although I've never practiced law. So, you know, I personally, for me, wouldn't use one simply because I don't think I need one. My advice to people who are asking should they get their attorney involved in drafting the contract or working with the realtor on the contract is, if it makes you comfortable and you're willing to spend the money and your realtor understands that you're not trying to replace them, it's just giving you as the client, who in essence is ending up paying them through the commission, more comfort, then by all means spend the money. Usually, unless it's a very, very complicated transaction, however, usually you don't need it for a simple home purchase.
All right. In the time we have left, let me change gears a little bit. What about the person who's thinking about buying a condominium unit or maybe a home in a gated community? How much of the community's rules do they need to know before they buy? And is the realtor responsible for filling them in on that, or is it their responsibility to do the research?
That's a very good question, because as anybody who has owned in one of those situations can tell you, there can be a huge amount of information beyond whether the house has the right number of bedrooms and bathrooms and has a deck or a pool or not. And those documents basically are the rules and regulations of your ownership and of the individual property and membership in the homeowner society that governs the day-to-day operation. Many states, California among them, require that as part of the seller's disclosure, any buyer receives any and all of the documents relating to that homeowner's association. And if it's been in existence for a while, let's say it's not a new unit, let's say the place has been there for 10, 20 years, so it's got some history, you're also required as part of the disclosure if you're a seller to turn over the historical minutes of that association's background so that the buyer can inform themselves and say, well, this place looks okay and I think I'm comfortable, or maybe everything looks good now, but if you check the records more closely, you'd see from the financial statements that they really don't have a lot of extra cash come around, and God forbid they have to re-roof the entire complex, they may turn to you as the owner all of a sudden and say, well, we have an assessment of $25,000 you're going to have to pay, and that's kind of out of left field.
Yeah.
So, and stuff like that does happen. So, but if you have the documentation from the homeowners association there, you're much more likely to be aware of that or to see what the potential is that you may have to make a sudden payment out of the blue.
Yeah, that whole idea of a condominium just scares me as I'm getting older, because I've gotten so so used to living in a home, a separate, you know, detached home, and the idea, first of all, of people living above and below me, and second of all, of a group of a homeowners association dictating when and what I have to spend, I just think, wow, that's probably not for me.
Well, you got to remember that there's for seniors, my wife actually does a lot of custom work with seniors as part of her practice. In fact, she's certified as a senior expert. With seniors, you don't just have to consider whether a condo is your only possible solution as you get older. You could buy a single-family detached house in a senior development, so to speak. In other words, all the homes were built for people above a certain age, and there's a homeowner's fee, but those are really to maintain the common areas like the grounds, the swimming pool, if it has a golf course, a tennis court, that sort of stuff. But your house is your own issue, just like it would be anywhere. And yet the homes are all built with seniors in mind. Maybe they're one story, or if they're not one story, the master suite would be on the ground floor to the rear, so that you don't have to worry about climbing stairs and, you know, the arthritis knocking you down every time you try it.
Well, Peter, we're just about out of time. This went very fast, as I suspected it would. Can people find you on Twitter or Facebook or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'm on all of them, and I also have my wife and I also have our own website. The website is www.comehometomarin. Marin is spelled MARIN.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. There's any number of places. In fact, another place you can find us, but I also recommend it because it's a website for a very unique group that I belong to nationally. It's called the CyberStars. CyberStars is an invitation-only group of realtors, about 220 of us around the country, who are cutting edge in the use of technology to benefit their clients. And if you log on to cyberstars.net, you'll be able to pick one of the CyberStars in your locale. We're in almost every state, and you'll find probably the best realtor you're going to find anywhere right there.
Terrific. Well, before we do run out of time, folks, listen, you can find Peter Richmond's new book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Buying a Home, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Peter, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me, Bob. I really appreciate it. It's been great talking with you.
My pleasure, sir. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, folks, for more original interviews on business topics, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with the founder of Four Seasons Hotels, Isidore Sharp, as well as Guy Kawasaki from alltop.com, and many more. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman or facebook.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for listening today. I always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.